It is the Full Press Giants podcast presented by the Full Press Podcast Network. My name is Ryan Cuneo, the managing editor of Full Press Giants, recording this on Sunday, September 26th, after the Giants lost their Week 3 game at home to the Atlanta Falcons to go 0-3 for the season. And I see a lot of people on Twitter and just Giants fan in general calling this a lost season already. I'm not willing to go there quite yet. I think the NFC East is shaping up to be potentially nearly as bad as it was last year. And the Giants started, what, like 0-5, 1-7 last year, and they were still in it to the very end. So it's not a lost season, but I think we can definitively say at this point that it's not what we hoped for. The Giants spent money this offseason with the expectation that they're going to make strides to become a legitimately above-average team, and they're still bad. They're a below-average team. And the main culprits, well, some of them are the ones that we expected this offseason, that's for sure. But there's been some ones that we didn't expect, and it's been really disappointing. And I think a lot of those culprits expressed themselves in this game that they lost 17-14, a game that they had no business losing. They are the better team than the Falcons, in my opinion. And I think they show that today, and they still lost because they're a losing team with a losing coaching staff. And I'm going to, just like I did last week after that loss to the Washington football team on Thursday night, I'm going to hand out blame pie, divvy up 100% of the pie to, the deserving parties here. Who deserves the blame for this Giants loss? So I think the vast, vast majority of blame should go to the coaching staff. So I'm going to give them 70% of the blame. Particularly Joe Judge, I think, probably deserves most of the blame if you had to divide it up amongst the coaches themselves, but the coaching staff in general deserves 70% of the blame. They continue to coach scared and cautious, and they coach, I said this on Twitter, but they just coach to keep the game close. They don't actually coach to win. They don't even coach not to lose. Like that old cliche, they coach not to lose. They don't coach to win. They coach not to lose. They don't even coach not to lose. They just coach to keep the game close. They have a loser's mentality. Joe Judge deciding to punt on that 4th-and-3 from Atlanta's 39-yard line in the fourth quarter. Indefensible. It was a 4th-and-3. You can't pick that up. And then, of course, Atlanta got a few first downs, and yeah, they eventually punted. But you're just going to give out that really valuable possession there? The Giants were on the verge of getting points. They're at the even if you don't get it, they have the ball at the 39-yard line. It's not that bad. Like, I don't know how that you can justify punting in that situation. I know the Falcons' offense looked pretty porous for most of the game, except when it mattered, of course. The Giants' defense just let them march right down the field, but we'll get to that later. But you just cannot, you cannot punt in that situation. It's indefensible. And that's just one example. And then, of course, it's not just Judge, it's Jason Garrett as well. Daniel Jones, again, proving that he is, I think it's fair to say, he's an excellent deep ball thrower. In the first quarter, when he threw that deep ball to C.J. Board, of all people, that was another dime. It was just like the Slayton ball from last week. Another dime down the sideline. That was the only play they had of over 20 yards all game. Why don't you dial up more deep passes when that's clearly the strength of your quarterback? But they don't do it. They continue to just, run the ball, throw the ball underneath, occasional play action dig for, upwards of 15 yards at most. That's all they do. And then they have, this team has no margin for error with the way they play and the way they coach. Everything has to be perfect. They can't have one screw-up because they have no explosive plays to make up for any negative plays that will inevitably happen for every team, and it seems to happen more to the Giants, and the ones that do happen to the Giants bite them more because they don't leave themselves any margin for error. It's just, I don't understand this mentality. They try to win every game like 20-17 or 17-14. It's just not realistic. You're going to lose games that way. And they've shown that in two of the three games in this season so far. They should, I'm not going to say they should, but they could easily be 2-1. I think they should have beaten the Washington football team last Thursday, and they should have beaten the Atlanta Falcons today. This should be 2-1. We'd be feeling a lot better about this team. But because of the way this team coaches, primarily, they're 0-3. And they burn timeouts like crazy. Like, it was lucky that it didn't come back to bite them in this game. But the way they spent timeouts in the first half, if the Giants got the ball back at the end of the first half there, they weren't going to have enough time to do anything. You know, luckily, Evan Engram fumbled, so they didn't wind up, you know, really doing much with the possession anyway. But they could have used those timeouts, and they just burned them frivolously. And another example of the coaching staff failing is the continued inability to use Kadarius Toney. You drafted this guy in the first round, and he clearly has special talent when he has the ball in his hands. Clearly. I think everybody, even people who weren't the biggest Toney fans coming out of college, would agree with that. And he showed it even in this game, like that one, the one play he had when he caught the ball over the middle. As soon as he caught the ball, he demonstrated his stop and start ability. He put the brakes on that one defender, had him flying by, put another move on another guy. You can see the juice that he has. How can you not figure out a way to incorporate this guy into your offense more? Especially when your offense is not producing any points. It's one thing if you have this, you know, flawless machine, like, and I wanted to say the Kansas City Chiefs, but they lost today. But you know what I mean? Like this offense that's been a proven juggernaut. And, well, you know, we'll let this guy work his way in once he really proves himself. But there's no use, you know, breaking what's already fixed. But the Giants' offense is already broken. How do you not figure out a way to get this guy in it? Kadarius Toney is almost like a litmus test for this Giants offensive coaching staff and Jason Garrett particularly. He's the kind of player that if you are a creative coach with the ability to give your team an edge, you find a way to get him involved and he can give you that edge. And I assume that's why they drafted him, because they thought they had that ability to use him that way. Instead, they failed. They haven't been able to do that. All they've done is not involve him and then blame the player. Say, oh, well, he's not ready yet. And, you know, the NFL has a lot of different routes that he's not used to. When he's still getting up to speed, he doesn't practice much. He's just, you know, he's too immature of a player, pretty much is what they've been saying. You know, they've been trying to say it in a nice way, not, you know, trying to overly criticize the guy. But that's what they've said. They said the reason why he's not playing more is because of him, not us. And that's just unacceptable. He should be playing more. He should be making an impact. He's a first-round pick. Mid-first-round pick. You took him 20th overall, and you're doing nothing with him. He's an afterthought. How is Colin Johnson, who you claimed off waivers from the Jaguars, making more of an impact on this offense than Kadarius Toney? It makes no sense. And then the second factor for why the Giants lost. So I'm giving the coaching staff a whopping 70% of the blame. I'm going to give 15% of the blame, even though they only gave up 17 points all game, to the defense. They can't get a stop when it matters. And it's at the point where I don't expect them to get a stop when it matters. Which is all the more reason why the way they coach is so frustrating, because they coach as if they expect the defense to get that stop, when all season so far they've proven the opposite, that they're not able to get that stop when it matters. And once again, they weren't able to do it. They let Matt Ryan, who was not able to throw the ball deep, just complete these easy passes. How do you let Kyle Pitts get that wide open on that final possession, which put them in field goal range? They have two players you have to worry about: Calvin Ridley and Kyle Pitts. For the most part, they did a good job on Kyle Pitts, but on that last play, he just got wide open. I think he had, what was the single, I have to watch it again, but was that single coverage, Jabril Peppers on Kyle Pitts? How do you allow that to be the matchup on such a critical possession? And once again, their lack of any playmakers or pass rushers was evident. You know, when Matt Ryan really wanted to, he had all day to throw. All day. The pass rush was a little bit better today, I think, in large part because of Matt Ryan's inability to move within the pocket. He was kind of a statue, kind of a sitting duck there for our, you know, decent interior rushers like Dexter Lawrence and Leonard Williams to get to him. I think they each had a sack, or Leonard Williams did for sure. I'd have to check on Dexter Lawrence. I know he had you made a number, you got a number of pressures on Ryan though, for sure. But they just, yeah, they don't have anybody who can, you know, on a, when it matters, make a play on defense. You know, coming into the year, we thought this was a defense full of playmakers. We thought Logan Ryan was a playmaker. He hasn't really been. Xavier McKinney hasn't been a playmaker. He's just been mediocre, in my opinion. Leonard Williams, he had a better game today, but he hasn't really been much of a playmaker. Jabril Peppers has been, I think, bad this year, and I think that's fair to say. You know, James Bradbury, he did make that one play, but it's relying on your secondary players to be your primary playmakers, it's hard because it's their opportunities to make those plays are few and far between. But if you have a dominant pass rusher, then every time that team drops back to pass, he has an opportunity to make a play. And the Giants don't have any pass rushers on this team that can do anything. Yeah, Azeez Ojulari shows some promise. He had another sack today, so you know he could develop into that guy, but he's just far too young to be that guy right now. And listen, I know they only gave up 17 points, and the Giants should have won this game. But they just couldn't do it. They the defense could not get the stop when it mattered. And yeah, and then the third factor that that lost this Giants the game, and I'm going to give them another 15% of the blame to round out the 100% of the blame pie, was the offensive line. They continue to give up bad sacks at really inopportune times, knocking the Giants out of field goal range, killing the momentum of drives. They just continue to do it. I mean, on that one play in the, on the Giants' first drive when Grady Jarrett just embarrassed Brent Bredesen on that pass rush, which is bad. And then Nate Solder got beat a number of times. Most of the time, Daniel Jones was able to avoid pressure, but on that one play, when the Giants needed it, he, you know, maybe Jones stood in the pocket for a little bit too long, but he's trying to look downfield to make a play, and Solder just got beat clean around the edge by Dexter Fowler. And then, yeah, there's the strip sack. Thankfully, Jones fell on it. Not that it mattered in the end anyways, but thankfully he fell on it. But, man, it's just, it's bad when three-fifths of your starting offensive line are Nate Solder, who's old and washed up, Billy Price, who is a proven bust and is starting for us because of, you know, obviously because of injury, but, you know, the Giants should have had better depth to begin with. And then Ben Bredesen, who was an emergency trade from the Ravens. And all three of those guys did not play well. And you know, they can't open up holes in the running game for Saquon either. You know, they're inconsistent pass blockers and they're bad run blockers for the most part. And that's a big reason why this Giants offense isn't more consistent because, you know, I think Jason Garrett's probably a little bit scared to drop Daniel Jones back often and have him throw deep because he doesn't trust the Giants' offensive line's ability to pass protect. It's not an excuse, but that's probably what's going through his head. That's probably what's preventing him from striking deep more often. They should still do it more because what they're doing now is clearly not working. But that's probably what's going through his mind. So yeah, that's the blame pie for today. For today's loss to the Falcons. And the worst part is, man, is Daniel Jones played well. I mean, we'll get to him later when we do our podium sodium players, but he played well again. You know, he was effective on the ground. So he went 24 for 35, 266 yards. Once again, he had over 7 yards per attempt. Over a 90 quarterback rating. Like, he played well again. He is not the problem. And people who, you know, rag on Daniel Jones, people who hated him from the time he was drafted, you know, they've had their justifiable criticisms of him in the past. But this year, those criticisms ring hollow. He's taken care of the ball. Yeah, he fumbled on that play, but he recovered it. And he hasn't thrown any interceptions so far. Or even really come close. And that's another thing with the Giants' defense. Matt Ryan gave them a number of opportunities to make on the play on the ball. Adoree Jackson, you have to make that interception in the end zone to win the Giants that game. You just have to. Logan Ryan had a few opportunities to make a play that he couldn't. And then when he had to, you know, be one-on-one in coverage with Kyle Pitts, he just stood no chance. It was just a complete mismatch. He's been disappointing this year. and your quarterback is playing well, and you still can't manage to put up 14 points, what an indictment on this offensive coaching staff when your quarterback is playing this well and you can't put up more than 14 points against the Falcons defense at home. It's just, it's not nearly good enough, and if it continues this way, I just cannot imagine that Jason Garrett lasts the entire year. I just can't imagine it. But yeah, let's do our podium sodium players for the game. We'll start, so I'm just for people who are listening for the first time, my podium sodium players, it's basically another way of saying studs and duds or winners and losers from the game. But I call it podium sodium players. So basically my podium players are the three players from the Giants who deserve a medal from the game, i.e. a gold medal, silver medal, bronze medal. And then the sodium players are the players who Giants fans are going to be saltiest at after this game. So basically the players who played poorly or most poorly in the game. So yeah, let's start with the podium players. And I think the gold medal player is Daniel Jones. I just mentioned him. I just mentioned his stats. I didn't even mention his rushing stats, though. The guy, you know, he actually didn't lead the Giants in rushing this game. Thankfully, that was Saquon Barkley, but he did lead them in yards per rush. He carried the ball 8 times for 39 yards. He trucked Grady Jarrett on that 2-point conversion attempt, which was really impressive. And quite frankly, I don't even know if this team is worth that kind of effort, Daniel Jones. Maybe just to save it for next year or for your next team, quite frankly. But yeah, he played well again. Took care of the ball. Good rhythm, good timing on his passes. Couple throws you would maybe want back, that kind of like a little out route to Sterling Shepard in the first half before he got hurt. You know, could have maybe put that on him a little bit better, but I also thought Shepard could have maybe, you know, ran that out a little bit more aggressively, where he kind of just shuffles to the side. I thought he could have ran to the side and that would have been a completion, but yeah, Daniel Jones probably could have put that ball on him better. But other than that, he really didn't have many bad throws. He played well. He performed well within the offense. Just the offense itself wasn't good enough. But Daniel Jones performed well within it. And, you know, he deserves better than what this team is giving him right now. So, yeah, he was definitely the gold medal player. I don't think I'm going to get much pushback on that. Silver medal player I'm going to give to Andrew Thomas. I think that's one of the major factors for Jones playing well is he trusts his blind side this year. And I know the Falcons don't have much of a pass rush threat coming off that right end, but Andrew Thomas, once again, didn't really notice him allowing any pressures, just held up really well. And that's listen, I know it's a bleak moment right now for Giants fans, Giants Nation. They're 0-3, it's looking like it could be another lost season, although as I said at the top, I'm not going to say that quite yet. But if you're going to look for silver linings, two of the most important positions on the field, quarterback and left tackle, have played well so far this year. And Andrew Thomas had another really good game today at left tackle. So that's a good sign. He's developing into, I think, what the Giants hoped he would be when they took him fourth overall. So that's really, really encouraging. Hopefully those guys can, you know, continue, and hopefully they can be cornerstones for this franchise moving forward. And then the bronze medal, I'm actually going to give to Tay Crowder. You know, we'll talk about the injuries to Martinez and Shepard and Slayton in a second here. But he, you know, had to play a lot more once Blake went out. And I thought he performed pretty well. You know, he led the team in tackles with 11 total, including 4 solo. He had that one pass deflection. I think on that kind of pass over the middle to Hayden Hurst. I thought he flashed. I thought he did a good job. And, you know, for all of Dave Gettleman's faults and foibles, of which there are many, and a lot of them are the reason why the Giants kind of put out the product they do every Sunday right now, which is not a good one. Hitting on him as the last pick of the draft a couple years ago was a win for him. And I think you have to hand him that. It's not a huge win because it's not like Tay Crowder is a great player or anything, but the fact that they found at least, you know, respectable starter with a last pick of the draft and Tate Crowder. That's a win, and he's proved it. And he proved it again today, taking over Blake Martinez. He wasn't a liability. And, you know, I can't say that for some of the other players on this Giants defense, but he was not, and he played well. And that was encouraging. So hopefully, you know, hopefully Blake can come back. I'm not, you know, as I said, I'm going to touch on that in a second. But his injury looked, of the three, his injury looked the scariest. But hopefully he can come back. But if he can't, you know, I think Tate Crowder could continue to play pretty well there at that inside linebacker spot. So, yeah, those are the podium players this week for the Giants. In terms of the sodium players, so the player that the Giants fans are going to be salty at, not saltiest at or saltier, but, you know, pretty upset at, is Kenny Golladay. We just need more, man. We need more from our big free agent, supposed number one wide receiver. And, you know, four catches for 64 yards, it's okay. You know, he led the team in receiving yards, mostly because Sterling Shepard got hurt, so, you know, he kind of won that by default. But we just need more. And, you know, in that second half, Daniel Jones is going to Colin Johnson, like I said before, a waiver claim from the Jaguars, more often than Kenny Golladay. Is that just because he doesn't like Kenny Golladay? I mean, I don't think that's why. I don't know if he's getting open. I know he was a game-time decision with the hip injury, but, man, we just need more. We need more big plays. We need to see why we paid you all this money. You know, you're an upgrade over Golden Tate, hip hip hurrah, but we need you to be a true number one receiver like you were in Detroit a couple years ago before your injury, and you haven't shown it yet. Hopefully you will. You know, it's three games. I'm not going to overreact yet, but I'm getting a little bit impatient with Kenny Golladay. You know, today was supposed to be a big matchup for you. Their number one corner, A.J. Terrell, who I thought was going to be a good matchup for you anyways, he didn't even play. So it was you versus Fabian Moreau, and four catches for 64 yards. It's just not enough. It's not enough production. I understand you're in a tough situation with, you know, Jason Garrett calling the plays, but I still need more from you. And then the player that Giants fans are going to be saltier at is Nate Solder. Like I mentioned before, he gave up multiple pressures. You know, at least he's playing right tackles, or the pressures that Daniel Jones can see for the most part. But yeah, he's just, the fact that he's the Giants starting right tackle is, it's an indictment on, you know, Dave Gettleman's ability to build this offensive line. And the fact that he gave him that giant contract in the first place. But yeah, he's been bad. Just way too easily gives up pressure to the outside. He just basically pretty much every rep, he counts on Daniel Jones being able to step up in the pocket to avoid that. And for the most part, he can, but sometimes he can't. You can't just always allow that pass rusher to just get to your outside at, you know, 9, 8, 9, 10 yards. It's just not good enough. And then the player that the Giants fans are going to be saltiest at, and gosh, man, it's going to be Evan Engram. He was hurt for the first two games. He came back today. I was kind of excited because the Giants weren't getting a lot from their tight end position. You know, Caden Smith made a few plays here and there, but Kyle Rudolph wasn't looking good. He was looking slow and old. I was like, man, you know what? Evan Engram might be a guy who, now that the Giants do have Kenny Golladay taking away attention, if he can be like a tertiary option in this offense, he can actually be dangerous with his speed and athleticism if the other team isn't able to focus on him. But he was the same old guy. He had two catches for 21 yards and a fumble. If you touch the ball twice, you can't fumble it once. It's a bad ratio of fumbles to touches. The guy is just a turnover machine. Thankfully, the Falcons weren't able to convert that turnover into points at the end of the half, but jeez, man, that was just bad timing. Bad timing. He needed to get off to a really good start to kind of make Giants fans forget about the year from hell that he had last year. And instead, he just reminded them right away by fumbling the ball. And yeah, let's touch on the injuries. That's the other thing we have to mention here. It's bad, you know. Sterling Shepard and Darius Slayton had to leave the game in the first half with hamstring injuries. They're not overly serious, and that, you know, the player will be able to come back this year, but they can linger sometimes, so you don't want to rush it. And Daniel Jones was kind of playing buddy ball with Sterling Shepard and Darius Slayton this year. Those were his top two targets. I don't know about in terms of sheer numbers, but it seemed like he was most comfortable throwing the ball to Sterling Shepard. And then on those deep shots, he would rather go to Slayton than Galladay. And now those guys are out, so I don't know, maybe it'll be a good thing. You know, it'll force him to develop chemistry with guys like Kenny Galladay and Kadarius Toney and Kyle Rudolph. But yeah, that's not good for this Giants offense, especially since that Jones to Shepard connection was really the main thing that this Giants offense could hang its hat on. And now that's going to be lost for how long? I don't know. It didn't look overly serious, but it might be a few weeks, might be a month that Sterling Shepard is out. And, you know, Darius Slayton too. So, you know, Kenny Galladay is really going to have to step up. They're going to have to incorporate Kadarius Toney, whether they like it or not, to make up for that. But the Blake Martinez injury is, like I mentioned before, potentially the worst of the bunch. Non-contact. All we know at this point, as far as I know, is that it's a knee injury. He just kind of fell over and collapsed. It didn't, you know, you don't really see that, or you didn't really see that hyperextension that you typically see on an ACL tear. But it still could be that. You never know. And even if it's not that, it could be like a torn meniscus or, you know, torn patellar tendon like Shane Lemieux had. Again, I'm not going to speculate, even though I just kind of did. But I'm not going to, you know, jump to any conclusions here. But it didn't look good. It did not look good. And the fact that he was immediately ruled out of the game is another bad sign. Hopefully he can come back at some point this year. So hopefully it's not a season ender. He was, the camera showed, you know, walking around a little bit on the sideline after the injuries. So that is the one good sign here. He was able to kind of walk off on his own power. But, you know, we'll have to see. We'll have to wait for what the diagnosis is here in the next day or so. But yeah, if the Giants are defenses without Blake Martinez, he is the, I think it's safe to say, the leader. Certainly of that front seven, and probably of the whole defense. He's the play caller, he wears the green dot, he is their best and most consistent tackler, and he's actually been pretty good in coverage too. You know, despite what people said about him when he was a free agent coming over from the Packers. So yeah, guys like Tay Crowder and Reggie Ragland and Carter Coughlin, who wasn't really gotten many snaps, which is weird. I thought he looked pretty good in preseason, but for some reason they just haven't really used him much, even in pass rushing situations. But those guys are all going to have to step up in the absence of Blake. So that was not pretty to watch. But yeah, guys, I mean, the good news is the Bears lost again, and Justin Fields looked hellaciously bad. So hopefully the Bears can continue to lose and get the Giants that top five pick that they so sorely need, and hopefully the Giants don't continue to lose and, you know, can show signs of progress, and hopefully this isn't a totally lost season. So that's it. Talk to you next time. Have a great one.